Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
NFL draft in the rear view, and the Cleveland Browns had themselves a heck of a draft, according to some draft nicks out there. Let's get the Cleveland perspective now as we head out to the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline. Daniel Oyafusi covers the Browns for ESPN, and he joins us now. Daniel, thank you as always for your time. We appreciate it. So let's start with the Shedeur Sanders of it all, and they didn't want him in the first round. They didn't want him in the second round. They took another quarterback, Dillon Gabriel, in the third round, but yet took him in the fifth round, traded up to get him. The thought process there, what did you think of the two quarterbacks drafted by the Browns?
Yeah, it was definitely a shocking process and end result for the Browns. You know, we all knew that they were going to take a quarterback at some point in this draft, and particularly early, but nobody thought that it was going to be Dillon Gabriel, which it turns out, you know, they really did do a lot of extensive work with him throughout the pre-draft process. You know, there's a lot of talk about Shedeur Sanders, Jalen Milroe, Jackson Dart, maybe even Tyler Shuck, but they did a lot of work with Gabriel as well. You know, they went out to Eugene, Oregon to work him out. They had him in for a 30 visit and whatnot, and they really did. He really did become a player that they coveted. Now, them coming back two rounds later and selecting Shedeur was even more of a surprise. And, you know, if you kind of take the word of Andrew Berry, it was the GM, it was really the value of it. You know, obviously he didn't really anticipate taking two quarterbacks in the same draft, but it kind of got to a point where, you know, he was just falling so much that it just became more like a kind of like a luxury pick, so to speak. So, you know, they did package two picks to trade up in the fifth round and select him, and it really just came down to, like he said, maximizing value at the most important position in the game. So it's kind of like a dart throw. So, hey, maybe not as much investment financially, draft pick wise, compensation, all that. And then, you know, if it sticks, then it becomes a great late round, you know, kind of gem.
So, like, any clue how this plays out? I mean, like, Shedeur obviously was a very successful college quarterback. We can talk about, you know, was it Pat Shurmur, too many devised high percentage passes? Was he pushing the ball downfield enough? Did he take too many first down sacks? But, like, I don't know, man. The kid went to two programs when nobody's won in a long time, and they started winning, like, all the time. How do you sort of handicap this thing?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, he did have a ton of success, at Jackson State, at Colorado. Like you said, really turning those two programs around alongside, you know, his dad, Deion Sanders. But, you know, it's always tricky with quarterbacks. You know, you look at some stuff that quarterbacks do and in the college ranks, and maybe sometimes it doesn't translate. And again, we talked about, you know, the past five, whatever months, you know, the talk about, you know, the lack of athleticism and arm strength and, you know, all the sacks that he took. You know, I think that there's some real things that he'll have to work on and improve on if he really wants to, you know, quite frankly, stay on the 53 and really make a push to be the starter. And obviously, you know, they got Joe Flacco in the fold, who they signed a couple weeks back. They traded for Kenny Pickett. So it really is like a four-man race. And Kevin Stefanski said, you know, it might not be like everyone gets a quarter of the reps, but, you know, he's going to try to make it fair to the team and to each player. But it's very clear that the team coveted Dillon Gabriel. I'd say first off, he has to kind of beat Dillon Gabriel mm-hmm. for maybe a backup spot and really prove that, you know, he's worthy of being on this 53. And then after that, maybe even pushing some of these vets on the team for a starting spot. But I mean, honestly, like, if you told me that any one of these guys ended up as the week one starter a couple months from now, like I would believe you, because I think that all of them kind of have traits and attributes that could lend themselves to maybe, separating themselves from the pack.
Daniel, it seemed like the first couple picks in this draft prior to it, it's going to be Cam Ward and Travis Hunter's going to head to Cleveland. Did it catch you off guard when Cleveland ended up trading down to 5?
It did a little bit, just because, the team spoke. They spoke so highly of Travis Hunter leading up to the draft. You know, they had the Ohtani quote. They were calling him a unicorn. And I remember after Andrew Berry made the Ohtani quote, like when everything had kind of settled, he left the room. And I'm like, is this too good to be true? Is he going to pull the okie doke on us? And then obviously, a couple of days later, you got, the draft rumblings that maybe a trade was in the works and it comes to fruition. And it turns out that this was kind of in the works for the past 2 weeks. So maybe he was kind of like buttering up the Jaguars to make them feel good about the pick. So it was a bit of a surprise, but not so much when you kind of take the totality of this pre-draft process. Like Andrew Berry was talking about, his end of season news conference when, they just realized that he got the number 2 pick. One of the first comments out of his mouth in terms of using the pick was talking about, maximizing the value, whether that's selecting a guy or trading it. So he was very open to it. He's a guy that loves to trade back. And ultimately, if you look at the draft of value that they got, they got next year's first from the Jaguars in addition to their second, in this draft. It was kind of the equivalent of a top 10 pick. And, I don't think anybody thinks the Jags are going to be contending for a Super Bowl next year. So if things don't go right for them, you could look at a team in the Browns that has maybe two top 10, 12 picks in 2026, and then they'd be really primed to get a quarterback next year when the class is supposed to be a lot stronger.
We're talking with Daniel Oyefuse. It's Inside Access here on The Fan. So Mason Graham and Carson Schwessinger. We loved Schwessinger going into the draft. Graham, how much impact? What are the Browns people saying about these first two picks?
Yeah, I mean, I think they got two guys who could come in right away and be, real high level contributors, if not starters. Obviously, I'll start with Schwessinger first, because that was a bit of a surprise, with the first pick of the second round taking an off-ball linebacker. But they do have a little bit of uncertainty there. We all remember that really nasty neck injury that Jeremiah Owusu-Koramara got when he collided with Derrick Henry during that game last season. He missed the rest of the year after that, and they've been very, very mum. Just keep giving him an indefinite timeline. So again, if he's not ready, if he's not cleared to be able to return, you got a guy in Schwessinger who is, a tackling machine, rarely missed any tackles, can play special teams. He'll have a clear role early on. And then Mason Graham, the reports were that there was kind of a short list of players that the Browns were going to consider if they were to trade back, and he was on that list. They saw him as really like a perfect fit for their defense, an aggressive attacking style of defensive front. And they saw him as really one of the premier, trench players in this draft. So, I think a lot of people thought they might go kind of offense heavy in the first round or first couple of rounds. And they really, they ended the draft with 5 offensive players, but early on, it was really just like sticking to the board, sticking to best player available and getting that value. And I think that they did that pretty well with those first 2 picks.
So like net, is this still in your mind, a rebuilding team taking incremental steps towards eventually being respectable again, or have they made any sort of quantum leap here?
Well, I would say that, even if you take out like the kind of confusing quarterback picks and how that all developed, if you take those two out and just look at the rest of the picks, it was a really, really strong draft. Like they needed playmakers. They added 2 running backs who kind of complement each other and I think are going to fit really well in this division. And Dylan Sampson and Quinshon Judkins. They got a playmaking tight end and Harold Fannin Jr. who's I guess kind of like Isaiah Likely. Like you just kind of put him everywhere, get him the ball, and let him like be a playmaker. So they're probably going to run more tight end sets with him and David Njoku. So they've really added to the offense through the draft, and obviously they kind of added some additional pieces to a defense that I still think has a lot of talent. Really the wild card is the quarterback position. Like they got 4 new guys in. Nobody really knows how this is going to shake out. If they can hit on just one of these guys emerging from the pack and just being like a functional quarterback, I think that they could be competitive. You know, I don't expect them to make the playoffs. I'm not saying they're going to compete for their division. But again, like, this is a defense that was just 2 years removed from being the best unit in the league, or one of the best units in the league. They still got the majority of those cornerstone pieces. The offense, you know, the thinking is that, you know, now that they're kind of going back to this Kevin Stefanski offense, you know, they kind of revamped it for this Deshaun Watson. They're going back to the Stefanski offense. The thinking is they're going to be a little more comfortable. And again, if the quarterback hits and you just get functional level quarterback play, you know, they should be at least competitive and maybe not a 3-win team.
Daniel Yafusi, always great, man. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
For sure, anytime.
Thanks, buddy.
Coming up next, so we'll get to the NFL league at large. Mel Kiper lost his mind during the draft. We'll recap. Brandon Bean went off on a radio show. We'll hear that. And Andy Reid on his new tackle. It's league at large next here on
Going Up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
If you're a parent or share a fridge with someone, Instacart is about to make grocery shopping so much easier. Because with family carts, you can share a cart with your partner and each add the items you want. Since between the two of you, odds are you'll both remember everything you need. And this way, you'll never have to eat milkless cereal again. So minimize the stress of the weekly shop with family carts. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
I'm a fan.
For Deion Sanders and Shedeur Sanders, all I can say is I think it's disgusting. I don't understand what the heck's going on with this. Fifth player on my board. It's never happened before in 47 years where a player that high has dropped this far into the fourth round. A quarterback that's sitting there in round four with other quarterbacks being taken who aren't as good as Shedeur, aren't even close, in my opinion, in terms of accuracy, toughness. Arm strength is certainly more than good enough. I don't see, outside of not being the rocket arm and the 4.6 speed and the big frame, the 6'3", 230-pound frame, what is he lacking? Somebody's going to have to explain that one to me. Fourth round, Kirk Cousins went. Fourth round, Dak Prescott went. Worked out pretty good for them. It's just that Shedeur was projected a lot higher than they were. That's why we're having this discussion.
Well, Mel Kiper was having a discussion all weekend long as Shedeur Sanders kept slipping in the draft. And I think some would say it kind of hijacked ESPN's coverage of the draft. Yeah. as he was not happy that a guy he had top five. And it was interesting, you know, they always show his top available. It stayed the same for a long, long time. But did you catch some any of the
coverage.
It stayed
the same for about 140 picks.
Yeah, yes.
I didn't consume a ton of their coverage. I had lots of commentary about it all over my social media. I feel a little bad for Cam Ward because it seemed like the Shador stuff started because, and part of it was we all knew that they were taking Cam Ward and they didn't even try to pretend they weren't taking Cam Ward. So the intrigue was all about the other quarterback. I mean, again, we just talked to Daniel. I know he's clearly hedging his bets here. I don't think this kid like is terrible. Like I don't think he's a terrible quarterback prospect. I don't think you do the things that he did. Again, rudimentary scheme or not. Like you're going to tell me like Josh Rosen, who went 10th overall, was a better college quarterback than Shador Sanders?
But he's not an elite prospect, and I think he kind of hurt himself.
He definitely hurt
the process.
I'm saying all that. I'm not dismissing that. But like, just think of the people that they have drafted and do draft and will continue to draft that they talk themselves into.
Yes,
right. They talked themselves into. I think the New York Giants talked themselves into Jackson Dart.
They absolutely did.
I am not convinced that. You think because Mara picked that guy, he's going to be good? I would say because Mara picked that guy, he's probably Daniel Jones 2.0, just with a little more of a Southern accent. Or, you know, he's like more Mormon than the Zach Wilson who went on the other side of town, and he's more Southern than Daniel Jones. But at the end of the day, I think we're looking at the same sort of talent pool. I think we're looking at the same sort of outcomes. Like, you're going to tell me that this kid, I mean, again, I saw the thing he did with Gruden. You're going to tell me this kid won the interview? You're going to tell me this kid's a Mensa candidate and he's got the science of quarterbacking down? You're telling me that you don't think Lane Kiffin schemed it up for him to have one reads and two reads? You think he was really playing cerebral style quarterback?
No, I don't.
Yeah, nah. Me neither.
Let's move on to the Buffalo Bills GM, Brandon Bean, and he was not happy.
Feisty.
Yeah, was not happy with being questioned about his draft.
I was just listening to the last few minutes of your show before I came on, waiting on here.
All right.
Sounds like 2018 all over with you guys.
Well, we're very – how so?
Well, you guys were bitching in 2018 about Josh Allen. You guys wanted Josh Rosen, and now you guys are bitching that we don't have a receiver. I don't get it. Like, we just – hold on, let me talk. Scored 30 points in a row for 8 straight games. A year ago, I get you guys asking why we didn't have receivers, but I don't understand it now. You just saw us lead the league in points when you add all the postseason. No one scored more points than the Buffalo Bills, including the Super Bowl champions. So you just saw us do it without Stephon Diggs, same group. How is this group not better than last year's group? Like, our job is to score points and win games. Where do we need to get better? Defense. We did that. So I get it. You got to have a show, and you got to have something to bitch about. But bitching about wide receiver is one of the dumbest arguments I've heard.
Brandon Bean, I just watched him do a half hour with McAfee today. He's fantastic to listen to, and that was great.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with him here. Like, they need as many people in the front seven as possible. They need to stop the other quarterback from being able to be better than their generational quarterback or score one more point than their generational quarterback. Like, that thing was an absolute juggernaut. They beat the Ravens because the Ravens couldn't stop their offense in the first half of that game.
And then the Ravens' offense stopped itself.
Yeah. The defense was, we all know, like, I mean, again, if Andrews catches that ball, I think we all think the Buffalo Bills are in trouble. Because the Buffalo Bills defense, even with the Ravens scrubs at skill position players, because that's what they were down to, we're still going to move the ball at will on them.
Yeah, they needed help on defense, significant help on defense.
Yeah. Hey,
do the Orioles need help, and where do they need help? We're going to ask Buck Showalter, former Orioles manager. Is everything fine now that they beat the Yankees last night? Buck joins us next here.
MLB.TV is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! Woo! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Go!
everything baseball all season long on MLB.tv. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
I'm a fan. Orioles won last night 4-3. They're back in action again tonight. Baltimore baseball tonight live from Pickles at 5:30. Bob Haney and Oriole Hall of Famer Mike Bordick. And let's talk some Orioles baseball now. It's always a pleasure to talk to the former skipper of the Baltimore Orioles, Buck Showalter, who joins us now courtesy of the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline. And Buck, thank you as always for joining us. We appreciate your time. It came to our attention the Orioles had a players-only meeting before the game last night that was led by Cedric Mullins and Ryan O'Hearn. In your experience, how important a tool can a players only meeting be, especially when a team is struggling?
Depending on who's pitching for you that night. Usually, momentum's usually your next starting pitcher. I would never have a team meeting before my number five starter, I can tell you that. Now, you know, it's nothing bad about it at all. It can be nothing but good for the most part. I never had a problem with them, but there wasn't a whole lot of need. But, you know, it's great. It does my heart good because I remember Cedric when he was a fledgling rookie that some people told me he couldn't play. And after I watched him in a spring game, I said, you might want to look at this kid again. Now that this is what he's kind of graduated to, that's pretty special. But, no, we'll see. You know, they've only played 28 games. Everybody needs to – it is what it is. I think they've had like 13 guys hurt. You know, yeah. I don't think Brandon all of a sudden has lost his IQ level from year before last or last year. I mean, you as a manager know how that fluctuates, but you know, I know it's very frustrating for fans because you want to see them be good every night, and you know, there's a lot of expectations there, and along with that, when it's not met initially, there's frustration.
Well, and look, Buck.
How was that, guys?
That was great. I love it. That was a wonderful first response. You're always great.
That's what
Buck.
I really think, all right?
Well, look, they have saddled this manager with a really young roster and a lot of kids who played multiple positions throughout the minors. Like, they rotated these kids, you know, 2 days at short, 2 days at second, 2 days at third. He doesn't really have great options in the corner outfield outside of Laureano. And we've seen bad fundamental baseball from this team from the onset. Like, the fact, Buck, that like it started from spring training and came into the regular season, does that trouble you more than like, say, a team that, you know, got off to was fielding the ball well, had an understanding of how to hit cutoff men, threw to the right base, didn't make outs on the base pass, and then somewhere game 85 or in the dog days of summer, they lost it. Does it trouble you more the way it's been like from the giddy up with this really young team?
Well, you know, it takes a lot of mental toughness in a sport that you play every day. It's Gene Michael, who's one of the best evaluator of talent with the great Stick Michael with the Yankees years ago, he had a great asset that he looked for, and not just anybody. It requires boots on the ground to understand. And he said this guy had great concentration skills. Mm-hmm. I remember when he was talking to me about Paul O'Neill when we acquired him in a trade. He talked about Derek Jeter's concentration skills. I remember he talked about Tino Martinez when we traded for him. You know, there's a way if you watch a player off ball and you see. So what I'm saying is the attention, I'm sure they've all been made aware of what's fundamentally correct. It's, you know, can you concentrate on it? You know, the baseball is a game that is very slow and all of a sudden it's warp speed and you have to be ready to react. You may not get a ball hit to you the whole game and all of a sudden the game's decided in the ninth inning. So it requires a lot of concentration. And it requires a lot of discipline to concentrate when there may not be something happening initially.
Buck, you mentioned mental toughness. And Brandon Hyde has brought up multiple times this season that some of his young guys are letting their at-bats snowball from one onto the next. And that's something that he saw in the second half of last year in which he referenced. How would you handle talented young players that would go through struggles to avoid it from snowballing?
Well, you know, competition is a great thing with other players. I think they always have to have that thought that, you know, you're not a super prospect anymore. Now it's about winning games. Mm. You know, it's about, hey, can you help us win a game? You know, I used to talk to our analytical department. We had a great one there in Baltimore. We didn't have as many guys as they're able to have now. But, you know, they knew, hey, I'm open. I want everything brought into me and the coaches. But when you walk through the door, I'm going to ask you one question. How does it help us win a game? And if you can't answer that, don't waste my time. So it's the same thing with players. You know, at some point, the biggest jump in professional sports, guys, is from the minor league level of play to the major league level of play. The pitching's so much better. The ball comes at you faster. The guys are half a step faster. There's a huge chasm in the level of play that they're coming from. So there's a period you're going to go through. Very few guys come in and just tear it up. And just because a guy hit 10 or 12 home runs his first year or his freshman year, whatever you want to call it, doesn't mean he's going to hit next year and 25 the next year. That might be their level.
Yeah.
So you got to keep that in mind.
We're talking with Buck Showalter with Inside Access here on The Fan. Buck, you mentioned it's attributed to Earl Weaver. Momentum's only as good as the next day's starting pitcher. This pitching,
I stole that.
What's that?
I stole that.
So the reason I bring that up is I think most people didn't think this rotation was going to be great coming in, and it's frankly been worse, and injuries have factored into that. But how do they get out of this hole with the starting pitching they currently have?
Well, it would help to get Eflin and Grayson back.
Yeah.
That would help a lot. You know, you can't invent a pitcher. You know, you've got this development pattern or thing you want to follow with players, but sometimes it gets pushed forward. And that's why you see, if you pay attention to the waiver wire every day, there is a constant shuffling of players back and forth here, make sure we're covered. You know, I personally believe if they'd go back to 11 pitchers, they'd stay healthier than they are at 13. And that's another story for another day. But they I think they're deep into their depth right now. And that's what separates these teams is the what ifs. You know, what do you do when your shortstop goes down? What are you going to, because the game doesn't stop and wait for you to catch up, and they will step on you and laugh while you're bleeding, believe me.
Another sort of, I guess, modern player development theory that kind of maybe dovetails with that part of the conversation a little bit. Like, there's a lot of organizations now that through the minors are piggybacking, you know, and you're going to pitch the first four today, and then when your time's up next, you might pitch you might pitch 6, 7, 8, and 9, and we're not going to really have you pitch much into the seventh inning, even if you're on an economical pitch count that day. And we don't even know if you're ever going to throw 125 innings in the minors, let alone 150. Do you think that might have something to do with these pitchers breaking down all over the place as well, too?
Could be. You know, did you see where Kevin Gausman threw 54 pitches?
Yeah, how about that?
And then fell down the stairs, Buck.
Oh, my gosh. Ooh. Yeah, that was a great day for Kev. But, you know, I got to tell you, there's a pitching coordinator / director of pitching in an organization I won't name that I was talking to. They had 80-something, 87 pitchers, I think, in minor league camp when they started last year. They had 0 Tommy Johns last year.
Hmm.
0. And there's another organization that has copied them this year. And basically, they have kind of taken out the weighted balls and the rubber bands and, throwing a pitch and then going seeing the spin rate. All they did was put up strings around home plate and throw the ball where you want to throw it. They put chalk on the strings in the strike zone where it won't deflect and hit the catcher. It'll go right through them. And he's got a big sign back there that says, I don't care how hard you throw ball for. And, you know, they've embraced, you know, they run foul poles. They don't go put running shoes on and get on a treadmill. They go outside in spikes and run in the shoes that they play in.
Hmm.
And it's just I think sometimes, and what he's done is they've really embraced seeing how deep a pitcher can go. If they get in trouble, let them work their way out of it. Let them handle adversity. Now, I'm not saying that that's going to keep you healthy. I'm not saying that this is, I'm just saying that there's a reason why you've got to practice what you want somebody to do. And, you know, I think pitching when you are a little tired requires a skill that you have to develop. And I think sometimes you see it. And I wanted guys to go, hey, look out in the bullpen. There's nobody there. You better figure out a way to get through this. Quit bailing these guys out is what I told some of our farm directors. Let them, because if they don't bite when they're a puppy. They ain't going to bite when they're a dog.
Buck, another modern baseball question, the age of analytics, and this isn't just the Orioles. A lot of teams do this in terms of jumbling up the lineup day to day or changing positions, like Jason was saying. How much do you value continuity in lineups and position-wise?
Well, everybody would like to do that. We got to the point in Baltimore somewhere the phone would ring in the bullpen and nobody had to answer it. They knew what the situation was and who was called, whose job that was. But that's just a utopia. It doesn't happen much. We happen to have Britton and O'Day and Brock. And I mean, we had Mattis. We had guys that just really fit what we were trying to do down there. But in a perfect world, you would. I remember years ago, we were given a book about what you look for in each spot in the order. And one of the more important spots was the nine spot. You know, when I look at lineups now, and I challenge you sometimes to do this, look at their 7-8-9 hitter compared to your 7-8-9 hitter. Look at their fourth and fifth starter compared to your fourth and fifth starter. Look at their non-setup, non-closer relievers. You'll get an idea of where your roster sets up. Because I was looking at the Mets 7-8-9 hitters. They're so good.
Yeah.
And I think the depth you're looking for, but nowadays it's like sometimes you want to go, yeah, he gets on base a lot, but he clogs the bases up. You know, and if we're always chasing that home run, it's kind of turned into like the three-point goal in the NBA. But I don't know. I'm jumping around. But I know exactly what you're getting at, guys, where the guys don't know where they're hitting every day and this and that, whatever. But I think a lot of them have come up in that environment. You know, they've come up with jumbling this and that and whatever. And face it, there's a lot of managers. I'm not saying Brandon. I'm just saying there's a lot of guys that get strongly suggested what would be a good lineup. Yeah. I get it.
Buck, before we let you go, today's the 10th anniversary of the Freddie Gray game, game played against the White Sox without any fans. You were the Orioles manager that day. What do you remember about that day?
Oh, so many things. That was surreal is the word. You know, I remember talking to the players about how important it was to our city and to the, you know, to make sure you realize how much weight your words are going to carry. I remember I could hear Gary Thorne like he was next to me down the dugout from the stands. You had to be careful because umpires could hear every word you said. And I'll tell you this, guys. Now, after about the second or third inning, we were playing baseball. It was like a B game on a backfield. And it made me realize how all the different gyrations and celebrations are driven by the fans. You know, guys would hit home runs, they'd run around the bases, they'd hit a double, they wouldn't do a hook 'em horns to the dugout. And I'm not saying that's all great, you know, emotion, whatever. But it made me realize how much of that stuff that guys do are driven by the fans. And if you take them out of there, I remember the balls rattling around, foul balls, you could hear them. And I remember one kid at the gate out there just kind of looking there with his hands up on the gate out in right center field. I was going, wow. But once the game got started, everybody locked it in. And actually, it was 2 hours and I think 10 minutes, 2 hours and 5 minutes. It was definitely like a B game on the backfield. It reminded me of Instructional League.
Buck, always great. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate, as always, when you give us some of your time.
You are the man, hey, sir. We love all of your answers all the time.
Well, nobody's that busy. God bless you. Everybody's got to quit taking themselves so seriously. Maybe the O's will get it going now. Take care. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Buck. Hey, coming up next with the Hot Corner, Orioles and Yankees game two. Oh, he's the best. That's why I said he should be the Orioles manager. But I know he wouldn't.
He might not want that kind of angst, you know?
Yeah. I knew he wouldn't answer if I asked him, so I didn't. Yeah, it's one more.
First of all, you guys are fired yet.
Yeah, yeah. No.
So, I mean, I think, you know, there is a code among those who manage a coach for a living. The guy's got a job.
Hot Corner next. Orioles lineup out. It's interesting. We'll give it to you next here on The Fan. Orioles can win a series with a win tonight against the Yankees. They are facing a lefty in Carlos Rodon. Kyle Gibson making his season debut. Cedric Mullins leading off in center field. Adley Rutschman's the catcher, batting second. Gunnar Henderson batting third at shortstop. Ryan Mountcastle is your DH, batting fourth. Ramon Laureano is the right fielder, batting fifth. Ramon Urias is at third base, batting sixth. Emmanuel Rivera batting seventh at first base. Jorge Mateo batting eighth at second base. And Dylan Carlson is your left fielder batting ninth.
Yeah, we've been remiss here, honestly, in not talking about the transactions. Obviously, Jordan Westberg, we didn't think he was healthy at all this year. Yep. It turns out he really wasn't. Hopefully, that's not a long stint. They bring Rivera up, who we know is a first base, third base, DH type guy. Thought he swung the bat really well for them down the stretch last year. It was a pleasant surprise on a team that didn't have many. And he can hit lefty, so that makes sense.
Gary Sanchez on the aisle too.
Yeah, you know, Sanchez and O'Neill, both broken down, bad baseball players. I'm not pining to see either of those two anytime soon. Maverick Hanley, welcome to the show. I hope he gets an opportunity here. I guess he will at some point. Was a little surprised they didn't call up one of the more veteran catchers, but I'm glad Maverick Hanley was a part of that 2019 First Elias draft class with Adley Rutschman. Glad Maverick gets his chance. He's one of three Stanford kids they took in that draft.
Yeah.
Doshback and Stowers. As to the Kyle Gibson of it all, guys, I saw him make what turned out to be his last start at any level was the Easter Sunday start at Aberdeen against the Brooklyn Cyclones, Mets High A. A couple of my takeaways from that game. The velo, again, the gun might have been skewing down, but I don't think he's in full sort of midseason game shape yet, and the velo was ticking down. Second time through the order was interesting. Righty started hitting him really hard, and I felt like the ball out of hand on off-speed pitches and breaking balls to lefties, like they could see it and I could see it. It was a ball out of the hand. Like he was having trouble commanding some of that stuff. There were a lot of misses that were clear misses that even once these kids, you know, 20, 21, 22-year-olds started seeing it, they made adjustments second time through, and it got a little tougher for Kyle Gibson. So we'll see. You know, I mean, I'm looking at the splits here against Gibby.
No one really kills him outside
Judge
of Chisholm.
Judge 1-for-10 with no damage.
Chisholm hits .357.
Chisholm hits him. Bellinger has two homers off him in 15 at-bats, but Bellinger can't hit the side of a barn right now. And Bellinger only has a couple of hits out of those 15 at-bats. Again, both home runs. So we'll see. Rodon, I still don't totally buy him, but he's off to a pretty damn good start.
Orioles and Yankees, 6:30 start. Baltimore Baseball Tonight, live from Pickles. It's Bob Haney and Mike Bordick at 5:30. And coming up next, we get back to football, NFL draft. What did Cynthia Freeland think of the Ravens draft? She's from NFL Network, and she joins us next.